Greetings and shellutations. Welcome to the Mermaid Movie Club, a celebration of Merfolk and media. My name is Mermaid Zandria. What is up, merpeeps? How is everyone? How are we doing? I know it's been a minute. Thank you all so much for being so patient with me in posting this first episode. Like, hope you weren't waiting too long. A lot of stuff happened on my end. Nothing I really want to go into a lot of detail over, as it's, of course, it's very personal. But don't worry, we're all doing okay now. Thank you so much again for your patience, because it is very much appreciated. Because that, I can't even begin to tell you how wild it was. But we just keep swimming. We just keep swimming. What do? We swim. That's not the movie we're talking about today. We're not talking about Finding Nemo or Dory or... Am I a little too close? Let me pull it back a little bit. Okay, there we go. We got it. If you're new to my show or you didn't listen to my intro episode, then let me explain the purpose of the Mermaid Movie Club. What I'd like to do here is talk about mermaid cinema with you. Cinema. Mostly on an entertainment basis. But we're also going to talk about things like mythology, culture, representation, social issues being reflected in these films, if any, and of course, history. I plan on exploring films of all kinds, from big studio releases to obscure indies, whatever the internet or my Amazon Fire TV can find for me. Of course, I'll be sure to let you know where you can watch these films so you can watch them with me. And of course, I open up the discussion on social media. I am on most socials as Mermaid Zandria. Mermaid Zandria is all one word. Mermaid Xandria. One more time. Mermaid Xandria. It's all one word. It's, again, just about everywhere except for Snapchat. I don't do that. So you can talk to me and air your grievances, kind of like Festivus or something, or offer your second opinions on what I'm talking about. And I also have the Anchor voicemail box. So if you'd like to leave me a sweet little voicemail, maybe you want to talk about another point about the movie in depth, or just say hi, because that's always nice, you can do that through the Anchor app. It's free for Google Play, iOS, what have you. That's not a plug, I promise. I'm just saying, if you want it, there it is. Communicate with us, with me. I'm alone. I'm all alone. For now. So, let's dive into this week's selection, which is Aquamarine. I thought I'd kick things off with some lighter fare, something we're probably familiar with, but nothing too deep or intense or even too obvious. You know, keep them wanting more. This film is a cornerstone of 2000s teen cinema, even if I didn't see it for a couple of years. I don't know why. It's weird, because I read the book like twice in 6th and 7th grade. I don't remember why I didn't see it in theaters. I just don't. But better late than never, I guess. So let's get into the specs, shall we? Aquamarine, 2006 teen fantasy film starring Emma Roberts, Joanna Levesque, I think that's the pronunciation, but we know her better as the R&B queen of the 2000s, JoJo. And by the way, she's still killing it. She's still doing awesome music. Oh my gosh. And of course, Sarah Paxton, another great actress. That sounded so dismissive. I'm so sorry. I'm not trying to dismiss anybody. I'm just saying, I grew up more with JoJo, just because I was like, her music was like everywhere. And Emma Roberts, I remember seeing her more on American Horror Story, because I didn't watch Unfabulous or Scream Queens. But I really do like her in American Horror Story. The only American Horror Story I've watched all the way through was Cult, and that was incredible. And I didn't finish anything after that. Anyway, but that's beside the point. The film was adapted from a 2001 novel of the same name by Alice Hoffman, which, like I said, young Zandria was obsessed with it. This film is directed by Elizabeth Allen and produced by Susan Cartsonis through Storefront Pictures, distributed by 20th Century Fox's Fox 2000 Pictures imprint. That was a lot. And here's some mermaid specs for you, because, of course, this is the Mermaid Movie Club. We've got a bit of a focus here. Aquamarine's Tale was made by JMB FX Studios, the same company behind the tales from H2O Just Add Water, maybe also Mako Mermaids, I want to say they're the same, and the 2007 film Fish Tales. I didn't see anyone credited as a mermaid trainer or anything for this film, but Sarah Paxton did have to undergo some extended swim training before filming began, you know, as you do. According to IMDb, four tails were produced with foam and silicone skins, in addition to, get this, a cable-controlled tail that allowed for more intricate fluke movement that couldn't be done in the regular tails. That's more of like the kind of crazy, bendy tail stuff that you can see like when she's in the pool. I love that. I'm sorry if you can hear like me scratching. That's exactly what that is. Something about this shirt, I think. Those tails are each covered in over 5,000 scales. So that's like 20, 25,000 scales or more. I don't know math. Don't ask me to do math. This isn't a math podcast. This is a mermaid podcast. We're not doing math here. Please don't ask me to do math ever. It's a long story. I have a really, really bad, complicated relationship with math. It's tragic. Okay. Anyway, moving on. If you follow me on Twitter, again, Mermaids Andrea, all one word, you may have seen me ask a lot of questions about Aquamarine's ownership following the 2019 buyout of 20th Century Fox by the Walt Disney Company, considering that the film only appears to be distributed by Fox. The opening titles mention that it is a Fox 2000 film, so I think that effectively puts it under Disney's umbrella, since Fox 2000 was part of the deal last year. Fox 2000, I believe it was like an imprint focusing on, I want to say younger leaning films, but I don't think that's true. I forget what it was. That was like the one thing I forgot to write in my notes. Way to go, Xandria. Way to go. So, funny thing, Disney actually plans to shutter Fox 2000 after The Woman in the Window comes out this year, comes out this May, I should say. So why? Are you asking me? Cause I don't know. I really don't know. I've been questioning several of Disney's choices over the past several years, both creative and financial, such as why adapt Artemis Fowl years after it was relevant? Why are we not allowed to call the child from The Mandalorian Baby Yoda? Why is there still no permanent meet and greet space for Moana in Walt Disney World? I've been wanting to see her, okay? I just want to say hi. And I have so many questions, but I have so few answers. Please give me answers. Give me a sign. Anyway, I'm good. I'm good. I'm fine. I'm great. I'm doing fantastic. Thanks. I'm doing fantastic. So, like I said, the movie is adapted from the Alice Hoffman novel of the same name. The premise of the novel is that these two teenage girls, Haley and Claire, are to be separated as Claire has to move to Florida with her family away from Haley. Before this happens, however, they meet the mermaid Aquamarine in a rundown local swimming pool at the abandoned, or soon to be closed, I think, Capri Beach Club. So now the objective is to get Aquamarine back to the sea before she wastes away and crumbles into dust, Avengers Infinity War style, and also before Claire leaves for Florida. But Aqua, I'm going to keep calling her Aqua, and I'm going to keep thinking of Kingdom Hearts. Aqua is too befuddled with this human dude to the point where she doesn't want to leave. So it's a race against time and Aquamarine's own stubbornness. Movie, not quite the same. Where are the similarities between Aquamarine the book and Aquamarine the movie? Let's run down the list. There are two teenage girls. One's named Haley, one's named Claire. One is moving. They meet a mermaid in a pool. There's a hot dude named Raymond. And that's kind of where the similarities end. Remember that Catwoman movie from 2004 had Halle Berry in it and Sharon Stone, and how it was like kind of Catwoman? It was like Catwoman in aspect, it was Catwoman in name, but that was about it. Yeah, it's like that, but with mermaids, and it's moderately better, although I will admit to enjoying 2004 Catwoman on the basis that it was a shell of a lot of fun. I don't know. I've never really been known for having a great taste in movies. So it's basically like that, only with mermaids. It plays off certain aspects of the source material without totally and completely honoring it. A lot of this movie is Haley and Claire and Aquamarine pining after Raymond, Haley, played by JoJo, and Claire, played by Emma Roberts, trying to set Aqua, played by Sarah Paxton, up with Raymond, played by Jake McDormand, in hopes that Aqua will grant their wish so that Aqua's father, the king of the sea, no less, can believe in true love and free Aqua from her arranged marriage. So if you're looking for a faithful adaptation of a novel, let me just warn you that this is not it. Just a warning. But if you're looking for a feel-good, sugary, sweet, teen romance, J14, sleepover movie, dripping with mid-2000s aesthetics, something like straight out of Limited 2, this is it. This is exactly what you're looking for. You'll find out very quickly that I didn't like a lot of the choices that they made in this movie, just because a lot of them feel kind of pointless, or there's such a drastic tonal shift from the novel. The original novel already plays out so well as a teen drama if you have read it. Then you know what I'm talking about. But just based on its most basic elements of like friendship and romance, those are like the key elements of like a early to mid-2000s teen novel. There are a few things that are added for whatever reason that I just don't really care for. And as I go on, you'll find out what those are. That said, I accept this movie for what it is, and you know what? I actually kind of enjoy it for what it is. I will preface this by saying that it is by no means perfect, but I have no reason to harass the team behind the movie for not making a 100% true to the source film, because I guess that's just what the internet likes to do nowadays. So I'm going to kind of go through a few points, a few positives, negatives, things I liked and things I didn't. I don't really want to go into a huge summary bit because I feel like if you're listening to this, you've probably watched this film already. If you're actively looking for a podcast about mermaid movies, chances are you've probably already seen Aquamarine. So I don't really need to get too in-depth on the plot, but I will be touching on a few key plot points, or at least I think they're key plot points in this movie. The ones that stick out to me, at least. So, without further ado, ladies and gentlemen, let's open the curtain for Aquamarine. And by that, it means Andrea's opinions on Aquamarine. Let's go. So, the first thing I liked about Aquamarine, these are the good things I liked about Aquamarine. Well, that they would be good if I liked them. That makes sense. So, the first thing I liked is that the actresses are age appropriate. They're all around the same age. I know, novel concept. Sarah Paxton was born in 1988, JoJo in 1990, and Emma Roberts in 1991. So in 2006, that puts them all between, like, I want to say 15 and 18, something like that, with Paxton being the oldest. And that's appropriate for actresses playing teenage characters. In short, teenagers playing teenagers, which is, again, wild concept, I know. It's extremely helpful that you have teenage actors playing teenage characters in a movie directed toward teenagers, because when you don't, there's some body image issues that come up in there. It also looks super awkward. You remember in the Sam Raimi Spider-Man trilogy, you have Tobey Maguire and James Franco, who are in like their mid to late 20s. Kirsten Dunst, I want to say she was like early 20s. I'll let Kirsten Dunst slide, but Franco and Maguire, you contrast that with like the current Spider-Man, Tom Holland, who I think he got the role when he was like 18 or 19. Still not far off, you know. And then you have Mean Girls. Rachel McAdams was 25. Did you know that? I didn't know that for the longest time. I'm not a teenager anymore, but I can't help but feel bad for teenagers who are watching something like Riverdale and hating themselves because they don't look like Camila Mendes or Madeleine Petch. I think my dogs just got out, so I can hear that now. I can't help but feel bad for... I'm repeating my point now because I'm distracted by dogs. I can't help but feel bad for teenagers who are watching something like Riverdale and they don't look like Betty or Veronica or Cheryl Blossom. And that's not a dig at any of the actors, by the way, but it can be psychologically damaging when you think that at 15 you should have a fully developed adult body. Everyone's body is different, and not every teenager is even going to look like Emma or JoJo or Sarah, but they're at least in the right age range. So, somebody is out in the next room making a lot of noise, even though I've told them specifically to not make noise. So I guess we're just going to have to deal with this for today. I'm so sorry, you guys. I've really, really tried my best, but despite my best efforts, we just have some external background noise. I don't know, and if you're not hearing it, then great. That's also great. So, the next good thing. Aquamarine is a little sassy pants. She's a little sassy fish. She's not like an overly sweet princess type. Not saying Ariel was. She's not like an evil, creepy siren. And she's not like this elegant queen, mother-like figure, like, say, the Grandma Mare, I think was her name, from Ponyo. You know who I'm talking about. She's like the big, like, mama mermaid at the end of the movie. She's a teenager, so she acts like one. She's sarcastic, she's a bit rude, and I hesitate to say catty because I don't like that word. It has negative connotations. When she first meets Haley and Claire, they're like totally dumbfounded. Like, what? Are you seeing this? Because I'm seeing this, and I don't know if you are. I don't know if I'm just seeing things. And you have Aqua kind of in the middle of it, like, okay. I guess we're going to take this slow. By the way, I'm not using any audio from the movie because I'm living in fear of Disney Fox getting on me for using copyrighted audio. Sorry. So she's like, all right, I guess we're just gonna have to take this slow. Say it with me. Mermaid. And she's like making fun of him actively, and I think that's kind of funny. It kind of goes back, I think, to the mermaids from Peter Pan, actually, where they're kind of not super nice. And I think this is definitely taking it in a more like early to mid-2000s sarcastic Fish kind of way. I really like that. You know, later on she goes on to say something along the lines of, yeah, yeah, half woman, half fish, always sitting on rocks, combing our hair, blah, blah, blah. That's some self-awareness that I kind of love in a mermaid. Like, she knows she's legendary, not legendary herself, but being what she is, obviously. She comes out, she's like, you know me, in a very Tony Stark kind of way. It's arrogant, and I hate arrogance, but in this context, it's meta, which can be obnoxious, of course. But it's unexpected coming from the mermaid. There's also this great bit where Haley wants to touch Aqua's tail, and Aqua obliges, of course. She's like, here you go, check it out. And Haley reacts as anyone would touching a mermaid's tail, like, ugh, kind of slimy. And then Aqua, get this, Aqua grabs Claire's foot, and she nearly drowns Claire. Keep in mind, there's like a point in the movie where Claire can't actually swim, so Claire nearly drowns at this point. But the whole thing is that Aqua does this because she wants to know what feet feel like. And it's kind of this nice way, this funny way, of Aqua turning the tables, letting them know how it feels for her when humans prod and poke at her. And, I mean, I guess at least they asked. So, good thing number three. Really like this thing. Aqua is aesthetically hashtag mermaid goals. If you live in the year 2006, I guess. Yes, the aesthetics are dated, but personally speaking, I live for those early to mid-2000s aesthetics, so I live for Aqua's random blue streak in her hair. I choose to believe she is responsible for the mermaid hair trend of the 2010s, completely ironically. Unironically, I should say. I live for her color-changing mood nails, I live for her chatty starfish earrings that compliment her all the time, and I live for her shell phone. Those last ones don't seem super specific to the era, but I wanted to point them out anyway. Aquamarine is 100% that fish. Shoutouts to Lizzo. And now the stuff I didn't like, because of course they're, you take the good, you take the bad, you take them both, and then you have the facts of life, and then Aquamarine. So the I think one of the biggest things I didn't like about this was that Haley and Claire ultimately have selfish motivations for helping Aqua. They want to set Aqua up on a date with Raymond, all while being weirdly possessive of him, so she can show their father what true love is, and then she'll grant Haley and Claire's wish. The reason why I hate this is because Aqua really seems to see them as friends, and she's really making a connection with them. However, for a decent portion of the movie, Haley and Claire are treating Aqua kind of like a wish ticket. Like, she's the only thing standing between them and their friendship, about as much as a mermaid can stand. She's the only thing standing between their friendship and Haley's big move. And this honestly kind of destroys Aqua. I would be too, and while I can't blame Haley and Claire for their tactics, at the same time, Aqua has feelings too. I think eventually they realize they have been hurting Aqua, and they all make up, sure, but still, have some consideration. Also, the simultaneous hoarding of Raymond by Haley and Claire versus Haley and Claire setting Aqua up with Raymond kind of makes little sense until you realize their motivations, I guess? Okay, it's still not making sense. I don't know. The setting up of Aqua and Raymond was actually a thing in the novel, although I don't remember it being as big of a plot point as it was in the movie, though, because this plot point seems to dominate the entire movie, whereas the novel seemed to be more about Aquamarine's eventual rescue. In the novel, it seemed more like they were interested in helping Aquamarine return home and help set her up with Raymond, rather than using her to essentially prevent them from having to separate. I don't know. It's not nice. Bad thing number two. This was another thing that really, really bothered me about Aquamarine. There's this mean girl character in the movie named Cecilia who is not in the novel. And while I'm okay with little derivations from the novel, this one just didn't really seem like it had any point. It just seemed like it was a criteria that they put in there to say, hey, look, this is a teen movie. Every teen movie's got to have this nasty mean girl in it. So, yeah, she's not even mentioned. I don't think she's even alluded to. And in the context of the movie, she feels very typical. She's like a mean girl character that exists because this is a teen movie and she has to be there to be a rival. She's like the Regina George. This is, I think, after Mean Girls? Yeah, this is after Mean Girls. She's like the Regina George. She's like the, I would say Courtney Gripling in As Told by Ginger? Like the Kate Sanders, kind of like the Kate Sanders and Lizzie McGuire. And you know, I get that this was made in the mid-2000s, so I can give it a pass because of when it came out, but I do still see this trope in more recent media, like, say, Chilling Adventures of Sabrina. At least with Sabrina, it makes sense, since the show has such a dark tone, and it makes sense in the way that Aquamarine is a teen movie as well, But again, I just feel like she was ultimately forgettable and the movie could have done without her. But the real point I want to make is, while I can give it a dodgy pass for Aquamarine, I don't really care to see it in new media going forward. It's a tired, stale trope that pits women against each other, and I'm just bored of it now. And again, you know, I'm a woman of a certain age, or I guess you could say, and, you know, these types of movies aren't geared toward me anymore, so, you know, go figure. But I'm also thinking about, like, the audiences that these movies are geared toward, and how damaging that can be. I just don't really, so yeah, that's why I really don't care to see it in media anymore. It's not as much for me as it is for younger audiences who are watching, these movies are geared toward. It's all about them, because obviously they're going to be the ones watching this. Okay, so my next point, this one just kind of scared me. Haley and Claire, why did you put Aquamarine in a water tower? Why did you think that this was a good idea? I mean, you made it work, but whew, that was scary. It was a really stressful scene. They're trying to, like, there's this whole thing with Aquamarine. I'm going to mention it, I think, in a few minutes. How, like, the tail biology or the tail logistics, whatever, it makes sense. They have to get her, like, to the top of the water tower before a certain point, because there's, like, no other water to put her in, I guess. I think by this point they've drained the pool at the beach club. So they've got to figure out where to put Aqua in the meantime, because she's going to have to be a mermaid in a few minutes. Again, I'll get into that in just a few minutes, because that's a little bit down here in my script. Surprise, I'm going off a script. That's just really, really scary. And those are easily the highest stakes in the movie up until maybe the end. And even then, I don't even feel like the stakes at the end were, they still didn't feel that high. But I guess it's just because, like, once we got to, like, the weird CGI stuff, it was like, okay, it's weird now. And that's just the way this film is. It's just how bizarre it is. But again, I do like some bizarreness. And like I said, the stakes kind of end there. In the novel, the stakes are already pretty high, because as the novel progresses, Aquamarine is slowly deteriorating from, you know, being out of the sea, being stuck in chlorinated water, spending time out of the water in general. And Alice Hoffman does a really good job at illustrating this. If you read the novel, you'll know what I'm talking about. You know, you've got scales falling off of her tail onto the wheel, onto her wheelchair. They use a wheelchair to transport her around a few times. Her skin is dulling, I think. Like, her tail is losing its color. Her voice is becoming weaker. She's, like, got dust falling off of her. Again, it's all very Thanos, I guess. I never thought I'd be able to make the connection between Avengers Infinity War and Aquamarine, but here we are. I can't believe I did that. Oh, I can make a Marvel connection to just about anything at this point. Now, speaking of tails, I did mention there were some weird tail logistics going on here. In the novel, get this. Here's where things get interesting. In the novel, Aquamarine does not have legs at any point. She is 100% that fish, like I said. So that means she's 100% mermaid all the time. In fact, when Haley and Claire do end up taking Aqua to her date with Raymond, they're at the abandoned cafe at the beach club. She's in a wheelchair. I mentioned the wheelchair earlier. And she's wearing a super long gown that covers her tail. This is not unlike the Chinese film The Mermaid by Stephen Chow, which I'm definitely going to talk about at some point, because I love this movie and I want more people to know about it. In that movie, Sean, the mermaid in that movie, she's wearing long dresses that conceal her tail. But in her case, she can actually walk on her fins like their feet, none the wiser. That's really interesting. And so that's why I want to talk more about that movie, and I want y'all to know about it. So Aquamarine doesn't have that luxury. Movie Aqua, however, can have legs when she's dry, much like in Splash or H2O, or almost anything that came after it, all of the little copycat series that came after H2O. But there's this added twist, and here's where things get interesting again, of after sunset, she has to be a mermaid. It's like being a werewolf, only being a mermaid. Again, that's not in the novel. That's just not really a bad thing either, but that's just me adding on to the stakes of Aquamarine in general. And, you know, now that I'm looking at it, maybe I do wish this was a bit closer to the novel than it turned out to be. Because, you know, it's a fine movie. I think, like, the whole basis of Aquamarine, there's a little quote that I think Haley says it. Love is the closest thing that we have to magic. And so I think that's the overall message of the movie. And that message doesn't get lost. I don't exactly know if that was the gist of the novel. Maybe it was. Again, I read it twice and not many more times since then. Again, it's a fine movie. I don't find it great, but it's fine. There's things about it that are great. There's things about it that are not great. That should really go with any movie. But overall, it's fun. If you enjoy it, then that should be enough. And it is enjoyable in its camp, in its cheesiness. That said, it would have been interesting to see how the stakes of the novel played out in a movie. Who knows? Maybe someone will choose to remake Aquamarine in the future and maybe have it hew closer to the novel, kind of like what Toei did with Sailor Moon Crystal. But in the meantime, we have this. Another fun mermaid movie to watch when you need something lighthearted. And, you know, we all need that sometimes, especially now. You know, I won't lie, I do watch this occasionally when I need a pick-me-up. It's still an enjoyable film, even if you put it in, at least if you put it in the right context. High cinema? No, not even close. It's just a good time, and sometimes we just need that. So get your friends together, have a sleepover, pretend it's 2006, and put on Aquamarine. Were we still doing MASH in 2006? I don't remember, because I wasn't invited to those parties as a teenager. I know. I'm not super sad about it, but, you know, I do feel like I missed out a little bit. Now, I'm not going to sit here and complain too much that the movie and the book are so different, because if I wanted the book, I'd just read the book. Fairly simple. I don't need to waste time complaining, because if this movie wasn't 100% faithful to the source material, unless it was like a change made in bad taste, you know, it's just not something I have energy for anymore. And I think the internet spends way too much time analyzing things, especially the fandom side of the internet. You spend too much time analyzing things, picking things apart, making theories, trying to find things they don't like. Like, say, I don't like Spider-Man in the MCU because he's just Iron Man's whiny sidekick. Or Ariel was cast as a black woman, but she's supposed to be white. Or even, why does Maleficent need a redemption arc? Why can't she just be evil? If you don't like it, you don't need to consume it. And you definitely don't need to be a jerk about it. It's okay to, you know, get your opinion out there. But, you know, I've seen people on the internet, like, harassing the creators of these movies over things like Harley Quinn in huge yellow overalls as opposed to her iconic skin-tight red and black comic costume. Things like that. That's so stupid. That's a stupid thing to get worked up over. Accept that this is a derivation of the source material. Accept that it took creative liberties. And if you don't like it, either make your own material or go back to the source. That's all I can tell you. Rather than be a jerk about it, just move on. Also, get your priorities together. That works too. And even then, even if you do get a faithful adaptation of the source material, will that guarantee that it's good? Shall know. I mentioned Sailor Moon Crystal earlier. I remember when Viz announced that they got the rights for it and that they were going to be redubbing the classic anime, and then they were also going to be dubbing Sailor Moon Crystal, and even the announcement of Sailor Moon Crystal itself, I was really thankful that we were going to be getting a more faithful manga adaptation of Sailor Moon, or adaptation of the manga. But in its accuracy, it unfortunately sacrificed any sort of character. By that I mean the pacing was done in such a way that, like, it rushes right past character development. Instead of really spending time with characters and getting to know them, it's just plot, 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 gotta have accurate plot, 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 you gotta do the plot. And so you don't really have all those, like, fun little moments with, like, Usagi and Rei being, like, kind of rivals. You don't have those. You don't have, like, a lot of those tender moments with Haruka and Michiru. You don't really have those. It's just, like, plop, 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 plop. Here's something with Usagi and Mamoru. Plop, 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 plop. Usamama. Plop, 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 plop. And so, in comparison, it's just not as good. It's just kind of boring. But, you know, again, I just, like, eh. It exists. There it is. I'll go back and watch the classic anime, which I do prefer, in all its corniness. I did grow up with that, of course, so it obviously has a lot of importance to me. Similar point, my sister and I saw the Ratchet & Clank movie a few years ago. She's been playing the Ratchet & Clank games since they began in the early 2000s, so of course she would know more about it than I would. I was going in fairly blind, but both of us walked out of that, honestly, incredibly underwhelmed, because for me, it felt like you had to understand the game's universe to really get the movie, and for my sister, it just felt like watching cutscenes. Yes, it was an original story. It wasn't something taken directly from the games, but it was loosely based on the storyline of the first Ratchet & Clank game from 2002, which I have little recollection of, obviously, because I'm not the one who played it. Ratchet & Clank was deemed a box office failure, only making $14 million at the box office on a $20 million budget. Now, I understand a lot of factors can go into that, like maybe not enough people recognizing the Ratchet & Clank brand, or a lack of the moment cast members that would draw people into the movie based on that. I think the only big name, like Hollywood cast members I remember being in that, there was like Paul Giamatti, John Goodman, Sylvester Stallone, they were in that. But then you look at something like Sonic the Hedgehog, which I think is the number one movie in the world right now while I'm recording this. Jim Carrey is in that. You got Angelina Jolie in Tomb Raider, Alicia Vikander in the other Tomb Raider. Uncharted is going to have Tom Holland and Mark Wahlberg. You get the idea. But even fans of the source material are underwhelmed. If that's the case, what can you do? What I'm saying is sometimes the risk is worth taking. While I wouldn't call Aquamarine risky, these comparisons tend to be apples and starfish earrings, of course. At the same time, it is a derivation that I'm sure the crew at some point realized not everyone's going to love. That said, they were definitely angling for a certain kind of market here, and, well, they did that. That, ladies and mer friends in general, that's Aquamarine. That's all I can tell you. This movie, let's do the rating system. I'm going to rate them based on Starfish, not because that's super original for me to do. Starfish as a rating system. Novel. So, this is going to get, like, 3 Starfish from me. Solid 3. For me, a 3 can go either way, but a 3, it's something I wouldn't necessarily not watch again. Like, if I see it again on FX, because I know FX is running a few times, if I see it on TV, I'm putting it on, no question. Even if I'm not paying attention to it the whole time, I've still got it on. It's still something that makes me vaguely very comfortable. So, there's that. I'm still getting really distracted, and I feel like I'm getting, like, really kind of vague in some of these points because I'm just being so distracted by all the external noise out here. Again, I've gone on and on about how I don't want any noise. And of course, like a minute after I said that, it's like, all right, I guess she's done. I'm clearly not done, but I'm almost done. But moving on, where can you watch Aquamarine? You might still be able to find it on DVD, though I think it's got to be out of print by now. For this review, I watched it on HBO On Demand through my cable provider, but it's also available on HBO Go and HBO Now, if you are an HBO subscriber, at least. I think HBO Now is more... I don't know if you have to have an HBO subscription for that. I think you just have to be subscribed to HBO Now. You don't necessarily have to have a subscription through your cable provider for HBO for that. HBO Go, you do have to do that. That has to be through your cable provider, of course. It's also available for rental or purchase on Amazon Prime Video, Google Play, and iTunes. Don't forget to check your local library as well, because libraries are awesome. Mine has that system where you can search the computer for your thing, and it will search a few other county libraries for your thing, just in case your closest library doesn't have your thing. I'm sure that's typical for public libraries now. Maybe, maybe not. I could be wrong. And while you're at your local library, you can look for the novel if you haven't read it. I want to say the novel might also be out of print, but I'm not sure. It does come packaged with Alice Hoffman's novel Indigo under the title Alice Hoffman's Water Tales, so that might be worth looking for. You could also probably find that, like, thrift store or something. I've read Indigo as well, and that also has a very mer vibe to it, even if the main characters aren't exactly mermen. It's mer adjacent, so suggest checking that out. That's a pretty good novel to check out. Kind of in the same general audience as Aquamarine. It's got that same young adult vibe. Anyway, check it out. Anyway, thanks for tuning in to the Mermaid Movie Club for this discussion of Aquamarine. Please be sure to stay tuned to all my socials to find out what the next selection will be. I'm Mermaids Andrea, all one word, on Twitter and Instagram. I'm still trying to figure out why I can't get a username on Facebook, but once that's up and running, I'll be sure to let y'all know. In the meantime, this has been Mermaids Andrea. Have an amazing day and a fantastic tomorrow. See you soon. Bye-bye.